Hello, and welcome to Reset and Rewind, the video game movie podcast, where we chronologically discuss every video game ever. I did it again. I said video game, I forgot to say movie.
Every
video game ever. I did that in the last episode, too.
We are talking... You know how many video games there are? There are, like, 4 million video games, and we are going to talk about them chronologically.
Even Custer's Revenge.
From Pong to
FIFA 2021.
The latest game was.
So, all
right. Yes, that is what we're going to discuss today.
We're going to chronologically discuss every video game movie ever. And hopefully I won't make that mistake again on the next episode.
I like that mistake.
What's the movie tonight?
It is... Well, you see... For you, the day we did a Street Fighter the Movie episode was the most important day of your life. But for me, it was Tuesday.
Sorry, I don't remember any of it.
You don't remember?
For you, the day Bison graced your village was the most important day of your life. But for me, it was Tuesday.
My name is Doug, and I'm here with Kevin.
Hello.
And Paul.
Hi.
And today we are talking about Street Fighter the Movie.
I should have said
from
Hadouken.
1994.
Hachaklakalaka.
Don't like them Bergen!
Hachaklakalaka.
Don't like them Bergen!
I have no idea what he said. What those other ones are. I think one of them...
The third one is...
Shoryuken is one of them. And but,
Shoryuken.
But I have no idea... What the one where he's spinning on his legs, like he's spinning upside down. Yeah, that's pretty much it. I think it's that. He's just angrily shouting words. I'm a little upset that that wasn't in the movie, though. Was a Hadouken in the movie?
There was. He performed the Hadouken and the screen flashed.
Yes.
Oh, I missed the Hadouken. It's a little sad.
Yeah, Ryu did it to Vega.
Did something come out of its hands?
No, nothing. It's just a flash.
So it did nothing, is what you said. What you're saying.
Pretty much did nothing. Nope. It just gave me a headache.
Oh, great. Maybe Vega has, what is it, epilepsy? So maybe he's just going to seize or something. That's weird. So do we want to start off by talking about the game? There are a few games, obviously. For Street Fighter, but the most popular one is Street Fighter 2. I don't even remember
yes.
Street Fighter 1. Do you remember Street Fighter 1?
Street Fighter 1 had one of the smallest casts too, and it wasn't very good. Street Fighter 2 came out, well, Street Fighter 1 came out in 1987. And then Street Fighter 2, which is what this game, what this movie is based off of, came out in 1991, and there are a bunch of different editions that came out afterwards. There's like Championship Edition, there's Turbo, there's
Tournament, I think, is another one.
Yep. So there's a ton of different games afterwards that are named after Street Fighter 2. This one, what we're talking about for the movie, they actually made a movie game too, which we'll probably talk about later. But Street Fighter 2 Turbo came out in 1994. Street Fighter Alpha 2, Street Fighter EX, X-Men versus Street Fighter, that all came out in 1996. But the movie that it's based off of is 1994.
X-Men versus Street Fighter, huh? That's interesting.
Yeah, it was a prequel to
Marvel versus Capcom.
Mm. Yep.
I want to take it for a ride. Da, 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 da. I want to take it for a ride.
What is that off of? What are you saying?
It's from Marvel vs. Capcom 2. It's the background
is
music.
It really?
When you, during the character select screen.
I really like that game. I've only played it on arcade. Unless that's like the only thing it came out for. Did it come out for
I don't know if it's on the PS4. Is it?
Marvel vs. Capcom. Oh, the newest Marvel vs. Capcom is on PS4.
Yeah.
But the old one, like the classic Marvel vs. Capcom, I think it's only arcade, isn't it?
I'm thinking of two. Two is the only one I've played. I played three and four, but
like the best one.
Two is great.
They always fail on the first one. Like Street Fighter, sucked. Mortal Kombat 1, I don't even know. No, that was probably pretty good.
Mortal Kombat 1 was pretty good. We'll have to talk about that in some other episode, though. But yeah, Doug, who directed this film?
That would be Stephen E. D'Souza.
And what else is he really known for?
He's a very successful screenwriter with Commando, The Running Man, 48 Hours, and Die Hard.
He also did... So Stephen D'Souza also did Judge Dredd a year later, which is crazy good. But he also is pretty well known for the both Die Hards, which came a couple years beforehand. And he also worked on Beverly Hills Cop 3.
Wait, he did Die Hard 2?
Yep, 1 and 2.
So this was his first directing job?
This was his first? When did Die Hard come out?
This was his first major film that he was the writer and director of.
Yep.
I thought he did Die Hard. When did Die Hard?
He was the screenwriter for those ones.
Yeah.
Oh, screenwriter.
For that and Running Man and Commando.
This was the first one where he was also the director for it. He did... I don't know if he directed another movie that he wrote following this. I think this was pretty much it. But I will say that I think that this movie, despite what I hear online, I think this movie is pretty fucking great. Spoiler alert and swearing alert. I think it's a pretty good movie.
Spoiler alert?
Yeah.
There is no spoiler, just saying.
No, I mean, this is going to color the rest of the episode here, because I think it's actually a pretty good movie. From pretty much the opening scene on,
it's great.
I think it's a good...
You know, remember Empire Strikes Back? Luke, this movie is great. No, it's not true.
My favorite, just a tangent on that one, too. My favorite line in Empire Strikes Back is... Deck officer! Deck officer!
Deck officer! Deck officer!
Right in the middle of when they're in Hoth, and Han just like flips the hell out and just yells at just some random dude really loud. Deck officer! Deck officer! It's my favorite line in Empire Strikes Back.
I'm gonna have to watch that again. I don't know if I've ever paid attention to that line.
That's it makes absolutely no sense why he gets so angry at the deck officer. At that time,
Harrison Ford was probably actually angry.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
That's the whole thing.
So, this movie had a budget of $35 million. It was a pretty big hit because the box office was $99.4 million. So, it did very well.
Really? I didn't know it did that well. Huh.
Yeah, it was a huge hit. Capcom financed most of the budget and they mandated a December release date, which it was released in December 23rd of 1994. So they wanted it to be released for the holiday season. Smart. And D'Souza says he wrote the first draft of the script overnight because there were Capcom executives that were in Los Angeles and he had just found out. So he wanted to get it to them before they headed back to Japan. And he himself was a fan of the game. And this is kind of cute. He and his 15-year-old son would go to the arcade. They'd ride their bikes to the arcade and they'd play every weekend. That's pretty awesome.
That's pretty cool.
My dad never played video games with me. He probably didn't even know what the hell Street Fighter was.
My dad barely played video games with me either.
He was not good, my father, at playing video games, so it's fine.
I did have a brother, though, growing up, so we at least played games together, and I was terrible at them.
My brothers and I played a lot of Street Fighter, and they kicked my ass all the time.
Oh, I played, yeah.
I was terrible at Street Fighter. Ugh. I'm just terrible in general at any fighting game. I cannot, like, do anything. And I don't even know if I know how to do a Hadouken, to be honest. And that's, like, the easiest move in the game.
I think it's a down forward high punch. You have to, like, roll. You have to, like, roll your finger, your thumb.
That's
many blistered thumbs from this game.
I fully agree. This and Soul Calibur were the two games that I pretty much broke my fingers off of.
Soul Calibur, I just mashed buttons and hoped that I did something. I think I did the same with Street Fighter. Or I just did the cheese moves where you just jump and kick. Or you do down and kick.
You just use Dalsim and use your stretchy arms.
Or no, I used E Honda.
Honda's great. I always use Honda.
Yeah.
And then you pound his hand and then have his hand do the.
In the movie, it's
Edmund. Or Chun Li. What is his name? Edmund?
Edmund, and he's a Samoan man playing a Hawaiian man.
Who
is Japanese in the game.
Yes. Yep.
I don't know why they decided to. So everybody else, they kind of made their nationality, except for E Honda.
Yeah, I guess they decided to just. There were no obese Japanese men, so they went with a Samoan man. And we're like, all right, you're portraying a Hawaiian dude.
I mean, I just. Let's talk about that for a little bit. So the characters themselves, I mean, Street Fighter II didn't have, like, the best story, but it did have a story behind it, right? All these different people from all across the world were going to come together and have a tournament to decide who's the best fighter. So that's. That is a very oversimplification of the story. But in that, you have all of these different characters with different countries of origin. And somehow, Steven D'Souza is just like, forget all that. We're going to make them into, like, you know, Chung Li is going to be like a renegade reporter with E. Honda as their cameraman. And Balrog as, like, you know, somebody who drives the car or something like that. That makes absolutely no sense to me because they kind of fit as their own characters in the world, playing the game, you know, fighting. Like, for instance, Ken and Ryu are con artists in this. Whereas,
but they only con bad guys.
Only conning bad guys, sure.
Sagat.
But in the games, like, they're the lead characters, but they're relegated to just kind of tertiary characters in this movie.
They're the comic relief. It's really weird.
They are the comic relief. They had Ryu. Especially Ken.
Yeah, exactly.
My God, the guy. You can just tell by his freaking tie that he's wearing.
Joey Gladstone asshole.
He's barely on. He looks like a stand-up comedian.
He looks like Joey Gladstone.
Pretty much. Yes.
He does. Dave Coulier can play this role. I thought he was Joey Gladstone.
Come on, Bison, cut it out.
One thing I did want to mention was they did follow a little bit of the story. So M. Bison, I think this is right. I could be wrong. Chun-Li, her father was actually killed by M. Bison in the game. That is actually part of the storyline.
Yeah, she's out to avenge his death.
And I think that is maybe the only thing. No, you know what? Guile's storyline as well.
Yeah, so in the game... So in the game, Guile's friend Charlie is killed by Bison.
And he's not turned into Blanka like he is in this.
No. Yeah. Charlie and Blanka are two separate characters. Yeah. Charlie Nash. In this movie, it's Carlos Blanka.
Yeah.
Yeah, I honestly really hate how they used Blanka. I also don't like how they used Dulcim. I really wish they could have just made his arm stretchy for one moment. Because that's his whole gimmick, is just, like, stretchy arms. At least Blanka had, like, a green color or whatever. Mm-hmm. But Dulcim didn't even, like, have any of that at all. He was just a doctor. He wasn't even a yoga guy. Like,
he lose his hair at some point.
The only thing he says in the game is yoga. That's all he says. He's not even a yoga guy.
Yoga.
Although I do think that they kind of nailed Vega in this. I mean, in the game, if I remember correctly, in Street Fighter 2, all he really wants to do is kill ugly people. In Street Fighter 2, the game, and I think I mean, they don't come out and say it, but he pretty much just wants to kill ugly people in this movie too. I know he's working for Sagat, he doesn't but really say anything. He really doesn't say anything. But God, is he pretty in this movie too?
I think he wants to kill Ryu because Ryu has really nice abs. There's a scene when they're fighting. Ryu takes his shirt off, and then his mouth just drops. Like what? Because Ryu got the attention of a woman in the audience.
That's spot on with Vega. They also did one other thing that was to the games, which is or the game story, which is Sagat, which he was the winner of the tournament before, and I think in the movie he is considered like one of he was one of the winners of a tournament or something. I think that's what they said.
Right, he says his name is Iron Fist
Dealer. Yeah, I think that was his fighting style was Iron Fist, even though he just said Tiger Uppercut. Tiger Uppercut. But so I think that mostly was spot on. And I also with M. Bison, I also liked how they used his electrical power at the end, which I thought was really good. But yeah, everything else was complete and utter, like, out of left field when it came to story. And they totally could have used some of those storylines, because some of them weren't that bad. I read all the storylines of each of the characters in the game, and I was just like, they probably could have used of those.
It would have been great if Zangief danced with Gorbachev at the end.
That would have been pretty good.
That does happen in the game.
They really cast Zangief pretty well. And I like... I like that they made him just like the dumbest person in the world in this movie. I also think that they did a pretty good job, even though it's not exactly one to one. I liked that M. Bison is like occupying Shadaloo, or whatever it's called, in the movie, as opposed to it being his organization. He's like occupying the area called Shadaloo and making it into like Bison Land or whatever it is. And so that's pretty good. That's a good like pull over from the game. But other than that, I mean, there, like you said, there's a ton of stuff here. There's a ton of background for these playable characters that you could have used that you, for some reason, they didn't pull over. And completely tossed to the side.
So one of the things I read, which might have actually caused the story to deviate so much, is that Capcom really wanted to pull as many characters as they could into the movie. Like they were trying to throw in every character in the game. They had Cammy, who was barely noticeable. The writer D'Souza there, he just wanted just the main seven characters, but Capcom wanted like everyone. He wanted the Native American guy. What's his name? T-Hawk.
Tony Hawk.
And some other ones that. Yeah, it could have been Tony Hawk. That's true. Was that his name, Tony Hawk, in the movie?
I think it was Thunderhawk. I think the T is Thunder.
I was going to say. I always thought he was Tomahawk because of T-Hawk.
That would make more sense.
Yeah. But
Tom A. Hawk.
Yeah.
That would have been pretty good. I'm surprised they didn't go with that level of cheesiness of Tom A. Hawk.
That level of racism.
Oh, that's pretty bad too. Though Thunderhawk isn't that much better.
They did release though. So right before the movie kind of released, they did release the Street Fighter II: The New Challengers, which included. A bunch of new characters. T-Hawk, an indigenous warrior from Mexico whose ancestral homeland was taken from him by Shadaloo. Fei Long, who is basically just Bruce Lee, a Hong Kong movie star who wishes to test his martial arts against real opponents. He was supposed to be in the movie,
a funny character.
But he's not in the movie at all.
Yeah, he was the one they refused.
DJ,
what would he have been in the movie, you think?
He would have been Bruce Lee.
He would have been like Bruce Bison's Lee, like dentist or accountant or something like
I
that.
I don't think they could have like done anything different from him, different for him, because Fei Long was basically Bruce Lee. Like, he was just a one-to-one.
It wouldn't have fit in the movie at all.
So they would have had to like had a Bruce Lee character in there. DJ is in the movie. He's the kickboxing musician from Jamaica seeking inspiration for his next song. That is not what he actually is in the movie, but that's what he is in the game. And then Cammy is a 19-year-old female special forces agent from England with a mysterious past tied to M. Bison.
That actually is pretty close in the movie. She doesn't talk very much, so very mysterious. Yeah. She is British.
Kylie Minogue plays her.
She doesn't wear a red beret.
But, I mean, so those new characters were kind of forced into the movie by Capcom.
They were.
So he had to write them in.
Which is so stupid. Just let someone do what they want to do. Like, I barely even noticed that they were in the movie.
Capcom, I mean, there was no Cammy leak. Was one of my favorite characters in all of Street Fighter. I think she's actually a pretty fun character to play
as. Oh, she's a very popular character. I thought you meant in this movie. I was like, she didn't really say
in this movie, Kylie Minogue is fine playing her, but...
She's fine, but...
Yeah.
Do you know the story with her, with this movie?
No.
So she was like, she's like an Australian pop star, still pretty big today. The Australians Actors Guild wanted D'Souza to hire an Australian actor, and the only available role was for Cammy. And well, we have Kylie Minogue. And D'Souza wanted her because she was on the cover of Who magazine as one of the 30 most beautiful people, which I agree.
Really?
She's pretty good looking. And another fun fact, her and Ming-Na Wen, the actress who played Chun-Li.
Yeah.
Did most of their own stunts, more stunts than the men.
Really?
So that's thought that was interesting.
But does Jean-Claude Van Damme, he's got to do his own stunts, doesn't he?
I mean, like, excluding him. Yeah. I'm talking about, like, you know, the other characters.
That's true. I wouldn't expect any of those other guys to do any. Balrog, come on. The guy's not doing any
He punches
of
a few
stunts.
Times.
Yeah, he's a boxer.
He punches a guy in one scene. He punches a guy and goes, "Good night!"
Goodbye!
So cheesy.
Oh yeah, there were so many cheesy lines in here. A lot of them were said by Jean-Claude Van Damme, or what's his name? I always forget his name. The guy who played M. Bison.
Raul Julia.
Yeah, these guys have told me his name 7 times before this episode, and I still can't remember his name. I love the actor, but I just I can't remember his name for some reason. Raul Julia. But yeah, they both have pretty cheesy lines. Though he did, Raul Julia did a really good job as M. Bison, I felt.
He was great. He's a very charismatic actor, and he gave it his all for this movie. And it's very sad that he was on his, pretty much his last breath. Like, he was dying of stomach cancer. He passed away, I believe, 6 months after they finished filming.
Yeah.
I didn't know it was stomach cancer. I was going to ask, like, what did he die from?
It's like one of the more theatrical performances for a movie, I feel. He's extremely, like, over-exaggerating facial expressions and a lot of hand expressions. And he really hams it up for this movie. I think he does a great job. As opposed to, you know, a Jean-Claude Van Damme obviously is hamming it up, but not many other people are really having a fun time with this movie. And M. Bison, Raul Julia, just like killing it.
Oh yeah, you could tell he enjoyed doing the movie.
There are so many like really great Easter eggs in this movie too. From like M. Bison's stage is at the end of this. There's also like he's playing like a console when he's taking over the world. And there's also like, you know, bits and pieces of everybody's stage from Street Fighter 2. So there's a lot of really like lovingly placed Easter eggs throughout this movie. And at the same time, there's just so much disregard for the game throughout this movie too. It's a weird combination of like love and hate at the same time.
You were talking about the things in the background. I noticed that, so the big bell from Bison's level, that's in Bison's hideout. Yep. The statue from Sagat's level is in Sagat's hideout.
Yeah, you can see that, like, weird else? Face that's in there. Yep.
So, I would say, compared to the other movies we've talked about, I would say that actually this one's a little bit closer to the game than the other ones.
I'd say so, yes.
I mean, maybe Double Dragon. I don't know. I don't know what Double Dragon's real story was, to be honest. But if Mario, was one. Oh, that was not even close. Yeah,
I would say that this one is much more like direct reference, right? It pulls things almost one for one from the game into the movie. Whereas Mario mm-hmm. and Double Dragon, thus so far in those movies, they kind of like recreate and reference. Street Fighter just feels like it just takes it straight from the game and then pulls it into the movie. And so in that way, it's a really like, faithful recreation. But right. you know, it doesn't really matter if the plot's all over the place and has no referent to the actual game itself.
Well, there's probably, like, if you compiled the entire story of the video game of Street Fighter, let's say 2, which had a little bit more of a story, and you compiled it into, like, a Word document, it'd probably be 2 paragraphs. So, so that's really difficult to work with. So I give them a lot of credit for what they pulled for this game, or for this movie. But I actually wanted to mention a couple things about Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Yeah.
One of the things was a movie that we're going to be talking about very soon, the Mortal Kombat movie. He turned down Johnny Cage. So he was supposed to play Johnny Cage in that movie. He turned it down.
Those were 500 sunglasses, asshole.
I could actually see him playing Johnny Cage pretty good.
I mean, Johnny Cage is based on Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Is it really? Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he turned it down just to do this movie, which that's makes true, sense because yeah. he's the lead character in this movie. I don't Jean-Claude Van Damme, or Johnny Cage is not the main character of Mortal Kombat. Granted, neither is Guile and freaking Street Fighter, but I couldn't see Johnny Cage as just as goofy of a character as he is as the main character of Mortal Kombat. You gotta have Liu Kang as the main good guy, at least. Mm-hmm. And then the other big thing about Jean-Claude Van Damme, which I did not know about, and you guys probably already knew about this, but he had a cocaine addiction. I didn't know that.
You and, can tell, man.
And he was doing I should have been able to tell. But he had been doing $10,000 worth of cocaine a week. And they said it was during this movie. He was doing $10,000. How much cocaine is that? I don't even know because I've never bought cocaine, obviously, but still. How much can $10,000 worth of cocaine actually get you? He had to have been like just snorting it after every scene of this.
It's like Scrooge McDuck. It's like Scrooge McDuck jumping into that pile of gold. It's just Jean-Claude Van Damme's nose just diving into a pile of cocaine.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. It's crazy. I just, when I heard about that, I was just like, how? How is someone doing that? That's just crazy. But he did, like, if you watch Jean-Claude Van Damme movies, I guess you can definitely tell he's on something.
He was going through a lot of stress, too, with doing this film, promoting his other films, and he was also having marriage issues. And he also had an affair with Kylie Minogue during this film.
Oh, he did?
Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know very much about Jean-Claude Van Damme, apparently.
So apparently the studio paid for Van Damme to have his own handler on set to make sure he'd act professional and not go wild with the $10,000 of cocaine. And let's just say it didn't work. And Van Damme would just head off.
Yeah, they did a very good job.
Yeah, he would just head off into the night.
$9,999 worth of cocaine during this movie.
he would just head off into the night regularly, party hard, and it would result in him and many hours getting lost. And Van Damme would just turn up. Just people would just be looking for him, and he was usually busy just sleeping or trying to fight off his hangover.
I feel like drugs and alcohol are a very heavy thing in these video game movies, because in the Mario one, they talked about always being drunk throughout the Mario movie.
I would be drunk throughout the Mario movie, so, too, because that was a tough thing to get through. But
that's true.
I mean, there are a couple of weird things. One of the things that boggles my mind in this movie is they really play up one character in particular, who is Captain Sawada, who is a character who is introduced in the movie, right? But he doesn't do anything in any of the games, right? They introduce him in the movie. He's like really important in the movie. He's like one of Guile's like captains, is like right-hand man. He even is pictured, I'm pretty sure, in the victory poses at the end of the movie. But he's never in any other game. They don't move him into any other game.
Yeah, he was in the game. The Street Fighter, the movie, the game. He was in that.
He was in the Street Fighter, the movie, the game. But he's not in any of, like,
yeah, just that
the canon games.
So there's a reason for the whole Kenya Sawada thing. So Kenya Sawada, also playing himself in the film, he was a Japanese actor. He appears in the movie as like a, he's a part of a promotional contract with Capcom.
Okay.
So Capcom wanted, he's a Japanese martial artist, and they wanted him to play Ryu, and they really saw him as being this future like star, but D'Souza already had an actor picked for Ryu, and he was the comic relief of the film, and Sawada would not fit into that role at all because he spoke very little English, which made things very difficult on set. And he decided to make him a character just playing himself as one of Guile's captains.
It's one of the weird things in this movie, because it really does feel forced throughout the whole film. It feels like they're really trying to push this character as somebody. So that's interesting to know. Interesting.
Huh. Yeah, that is really interesting it makes sense that they really wanted to prop him up for some reason. Is that what you were saying, Doug? They wanted to.
Yeah, they thought he was going to be this huge like martial artist star, and it just never happened. I don't know if he's big in Japan, he's nobody really knows him here.
I watched this movie of like a month ago.
What was it?
Did he do a lot of martial arts in the movie?
He did a few things. They didn't really feature him too often.
Like I don't remember him doing like crazy martial arts. He didn't do anything. I don't remember a lot of crazy martial arts in the movie in general. I felt like the fighting was more like jokey fighting.
I don't know, man. The E Honda Zangief fight was great.
That was pretty good. The E Honda, yeah, that wasn't terrible. But
the Godzilla like, sound effects.
I was gonna say, yeah,
I love that. That was great
when they're walking through that miniature.
It was great. It was
bison
great
land. Yeah.
I like how they any movie that's like got a Japanese character in it, they like to bring in some sort of Godzilla reference, which is pretty good, especially because they made E Honda not a Japanese character, which makes it even worse that it wasn't. But I still enjoyed that. I enjoyed it a lot, even though. But like I said, like there were no crazy martial arts in this movie. I think there's more crazy martial arts in freaking Double Dragon than this movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, DeCascos had a lot of crazy moves in that film.
Yeah, he did.
So in this movie, the cast schedule for physical training and stunt coordination was switched once it was learned that Raul Julia was sick. And as a result, the rest of the cast would be trained only right before their scenes. And sometimes it was only like a few hours ahead. So that made things a little difficult. Oh, and some of the fights were, their fights were all filmed in chronological order too. So throughout the movie, you could see the actors, their fighting ability would improve. It's mostly, you can mostly see with Ryu and Ken.
It sounds like their choice of cast. I mean, they have Jean-Claude Van Damme, and who's a prominent like fighting movie star, and then you have this other character that they were trying to prop up as a martial artist. You would think that they would have more fighting scenes, like martial arts fighting scenes. And I think, like you said, it sounds like there was a reason that they didn't do that, like because of Raul Julia's condition, which when you think of it that way, it makes sense. Maybe they were just like, we don't want to, maybe they did want like some crazy martial arts thing with Raul Julia, but they didn't want to show him up because he's the main bad guy. So you don't want like some crazy freaking martial arts scene that overshadows your main villain. And maybe that's the reason they made the choice that they did.
Like, the really sad thing about Raul Julia is he accepted the role because his kids were fans of the game. And that's kind of sad.
Yeah, I heard that. That was really sad. Like, well, not sad, but it's like, it's sad that he was dying, but like it's actually sort of endearing that he would do that for his kids. Just because he probably wanted his kids to remember him in something that they loved, and if they loved Street Fighter, that's one of the reasons why he probably wanted to be M. Bison.
I mean, he does a great job as M. Bison. Like I said, he's like super theatrical, over the top, but I think he does a really good job. He also, I mean, I don't know. They obviously stuffed him full of like muscles and everything. He's not actually that jacked, but he really does look great as M. Bison. He looks like straight from the game. That's a pretty faithful adaptation of that character. And I don't know. I mean, I don't know if you've played any of the recent Street Fighters, but there are some scenes in which they have the same sort of like giant facial expressions that Raul Julia has in this movie. There's some things that have carried over into the game, some actual canon stuff that's pretty awesome. And so that's how impactful his legacy is from this movie onto Street Fighter as a name. You did a really great job.
So to prepare for this movie, he watched videos of Hitler and Mussolini to like get into the role of Bison. And he uses a lot of the mannerisms of Benito Mussolini. And also, like Adolf Hitler, he's a painter. Because in the scene where he's with Chun-Li, he's got all of his paintings.
Oh my God.
On the wall.
Let's talk about that scene, shall we? That scene is awesome. I think that I want a smoking jacket just like that. Because that's just like, and I want a hat rack just like that. The smoking jacket and the hat rack, it's just fantastic. And I mean, I think that brings me to the big point that I wanted to try to talk to you guys about for this movie is this movie a movie that is serious, or is it just a parody? Because to me, this feels like it feels like there's a lot of things happening in this movie that are meant to be kind of jabs at the 1980s action film culture. It feels like a movie in which, you know, Steven D'Souza is obviously like picking fun of some of his giant big movies, and the comical nature of action films from the 1980s and the comical nature of action stars. I feel like he's really playing up some sort of satire or parody of the genre as a whole throughout this movie. I could be reading too much into it. It could just be a fun romp, but it really does feel like a critical jab at action films.
Well, D'Souza did say, he said he described this film as a cross between Star Wars, James Bond, and a war film. Not a specific war film, just a war film.
I think it was a parody, to be honest. And I think he pushed to get Jean-Claude Van Damme because of that. And I would agree with you. I think he was poking fun at the fighting culture. And he probably wanted to choose a prominent martial artist, like we were talking about before, to do that same thing. It felt very...
It just felt tongue-in-cheek at times, right? Like, specifically the boat scene, right? Where Jean-Claude Van Damme is just driving in a boat to get to M. Bison's base. And I don't know about you guys, but that was just the funniest scene for me, because it feels like it's ripped straight from a Sylvester Stallone movie, right? Just something, right, where somebody's just driving real fast or like on a boat, stealth style, trying to get to a base. It feels so stupid. And I didn't really second guess it because does. It feels so ingrained in pop culture action films. And they keep picking fun at it throughout the whole movie. I don't know.
Yeah, I think they were picking fun at fighting villains as well. Like fighting super villains. Whenever you see like a action movie, a Jean-Claude Van Damme action movie, they're pretty over the top, just like M. Bison was. Obviously, M. Bison is way more over the top. I mean, he's making his own money with his face on it and all that, and they actually joke about all those things. So yeah, I think that's what they were attempting to do. Though I think one of my favorite scenes in this movie is still Jean-Claude Van Damme with the knife. And just that smile that he gives
it's
with the knife, acting like, oh, I scared all these guys with the knife. It's just
so bad. He's so good in this movie.
He just had that iconic smile and that, yeah, oh, he's good.
I really wish that Guile was played by an American with blonde hair and like a crew top cut, but Jean-Claude Van Damme does a good job.
I wish they would have filling done that. In. I don't think you could even get that crew cut on somebody anyways.
they did really want... He was like the number one pick for this film, Van Damme. So apparently the decision to have Guile as the protagonist was because of Capcom striking a deal with Hasbro to produce a series of toys to tie in with the movie. They wanted... Guile to be like the lead of these Street Fighter toys, like kind of like the Duke and G.I. Joe, and they wanted to like kind of attempt to restore the popularity of G.I. Joe. Did you guys own the G.I. Joe Street Fighter figures? Because I remember having, I think we actually had them all.
I owned a couple of them, but I did not have all 12.
You had all of them?
Yeah, they were weird. I feel like they just kind of like, you know those old video games where you like, it's like create a player? I feel like it was kind of like that with like old G.I. Joe parts, because like their outfits didn't really match the ones in the games, but they just had like these, all had like G.I. Joe attire. It was very odd.
I had a lot of action figures. I didn't have any of those. It's very sad. I feel like I'm missing out now. I wish I had that. I had a lot of dumb action figures.
So let me.
They were just very random. I had like Ghostbusters action figures.
Oh yeah, I remember having a toilet with eyes. There was a Ghostbusters action figure. It was like a toilet that had like...
But I only had one. I had Egon.
You look like an Egon kind of guy. Egon. You look like you would definitely be an Egon kind of guy.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I liked Egon. He was great. Thanks.
I think... So, Doug, the one action figure from Street Fighter that I did have was Dhalsim. And I think this is a perfect segue into... Let's play the game. What the hell happened to Dhalsim? Because this movie just screws with Dhalsim, the character, to no end. In the game, he's a guy who really is really good at yoga, to the point where he can like extend his arms and he can breathe fire. He's like one of these like super yogis. And in the movie, he's a scientist who like that's it, right? He's just like a very smart guy who's held captive.
He creates Blanca. Blanca.
He's held captive by a guy who looks like the bastard love child of Bob Hoskins and Ron Jeremy.
Just like, what the heck?
Did you guys... He was also like reading Playboy, that guard. Yeah. And then Blanca kills him.
I did not pay attention. I did not know that.
You're talking about cheesy lines. The Ron Jeremy, Bob Hoskins guy, he says to Dallas as he's like choking him to death, he's like, "You think you're smart, eh? Let's see how smart you are when you're not breathing."
Well, you think you're smart, eh?
Let's see how smart you are when you're not breathing.
And then Blanca.
There was a lot of cheesy lines, though, like that in this movie. So many cheesy lines.
And then Blanca emerges and kills him. By the way, with these video game movies, with all of the ones we've done so far, there's like this weird like pod device thing that a character goes into and then they get transformed. Like in Mario Brothers, it's the thing that transforms Toad. In Double Dragon, it's the thing that transforms a Bobo. And in this, it's the thing that transforms
Blanca. I was
going to
ask about that. What is that? Why is that so heavily featured in these movies so far? I don't get it. Why is that plot device so heavily featured in these movies so far? Because it ends up like, I don't know, it ends up creating monsters in Mario. It creates like a super being in Double Dragon, and it creates like a monstrous super being in Street Fighter.
I think it's to separate you from reality, maybe? I don't know. To give you a monster? That is weird. Like, why would they all have the same...
It feels weirdly, like, cyberpunk-y, right? Like, some sort of form of, like, human manipulation or, like, a merger of technology and human, or like a perversion of humanity by technology. So it feels like there's some sort of commentary happening through the three movies in that way. But I mean, I have no idea. It might just be a byproduct of like late 80s, early 90s pop culture.
I think it's late 80s, early 90s. You know what it comes from? The Fly. The movie The Fly.
It all goes back to The Fly.
That was a very popular movie. Yeah. And I think that because of that, it all goes back to The Fly.
The Fly with Jeff Goldblum from 1986.
That's how near these movies are. No, there were a lot of movies back in this time where they did this transformation thing. And I bet if you do research, it all comes back from The Fly. Hmm. I guarantee it.
The Fly started it all.
Because those monster movies were really big in the 80s and then early 90s. But then I bet when we venture into these other movies, you're going to start to see that dissipate away. It's going to be some other stupid trope that the late 90s had. It's going to pick up something from the
Matrix. Oh, God, that rotating camera thing was in so many... They parodied that in so many movies. They did it in, like, Shrek. And what else they did?
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah, the Frozen... I almost guarantee that one of these video game movies we're going to watch and we're going to talk about is going to have that fucking Matrix thing where they're just going to be slow-mo kick in the face sort of thing. You're going to have that bullet time or whatever it's called.
That's what it's called.
You're going to have it.
Yep.
It is called bullet time?
Yeah, it's called bullet time. It's
bullet time.
I think they introduced that term in Max Payne in that game, which they'll probably use it in that movie. Can't wait. Can't wait to do that one.
Oh, definitely.
They definitely use it in Max Payne. No doubt. If they don't, then that's not a Max Payne movie.
It's going to be a Max Payne watching this movie.
He's chasing ghosts in that Max Payne movie.
God damn it.
Max Payne, you're chasing ghosts. what else did you guys want to talk about with this movie? I feel like we've kind of... We haven't really followed a format like usual, but it's been fine.
Fun fact about the salaries. So after Van Damme and Julia were cast, most of the casting budget had been spent on them alone. And Van Damme's fee was $8 million of the film's budget. And that's why we have all these unknown fuckers that were probably getting paid nothing.
That makes sense.
Poor guys.
Also,
they were great.
Parallel.
$8 million is a lot. You said $33 million was their budget.
I believe,
right?
$34 million, I believe. Something like that.
$34 million, and $8 million of it went to just Jean-Claude Van Damme. And what was the other person who got paid in the
Raul Julia also got paid a pretty hefty amount.
That's fine. He probably got less than Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Oh, yeah.
Because Jean-Claude Van Damme is a finicky son of a bitch. So he
had to support his coke habit.
So maybe $6 million for Raul Julia. So that's $14 million. That means all these other side characters got almost nothing.
I mean, I bet Kylie Minogue
got
something.
They
gotta
have a budget for the other thing.
Yeah.
Who? Oh, yeah.
Kylie Minogue definitely got something.
Well-known. I think Meng-Na Wen is also very good in this. We haven't really talked about Meng-Na Wen. What did you guys think?
Yeah, she was one of the only characters in this whole movie who actually did decent martial arts and acted very well throughout the whole movie. Yeah, I like her scene. I know we've kind of picked on it a little bit so far, but I really liked her scene with Raul Julia in his room where he puts on that smoking jacket. That's an actually pretty well acted scene between the two of them.
Yeah.
And
for me, it was Tuesday.
And my favorite part of that scene is the facial expressions that both of them give each other. They're really hamming it up. But I love it so much. And especially when the poison gas comes into that room, and Raul Julia
the face he makes.
Goes behind the glass and just makes these crazy faces. Oh, it's awesome.
He just has the right face for M. Bison. I just couldn't, I had never seen this movie before, and I've seen a lot of M. Bison's face. And I just couldn't picture another person making those faces other than Raul Julia. He just did such a good job with the facial expressions. It's just spot on. He must have, studied the hell out of that freaking 2D image of M. Bison back in the day just to see what his facial expressions were. Because I couldn't. It was uncanny. Uncanny. It's great. But yeah, I also love that scene. That was a good scene.
Oh, fun fact. So we were talking about him going over reading speeches from Mussolini and Hitler. There's a scene, where he's showing Blanca all of the disturbing videos. There's real footage of a man being shot in the head.
Really?
It's actual historic footage from World War II. And they play it right after he says, "This is merely educational software." Man gets shot in the head.
Oof.
I don't know how they got away with that in a PG-13 film.
I feel like I read that too, somewhere. I didn't write it down though. That is pretty crazy that they did that.
I didn't think when I was a kid watching that. I thought they were just filmed for the movie. I didn't know that there's a man being murdered right in front of you on screen. It's pretty disturbing.
Yeah, that's pretty gruesome to show someone actually dying.
Yeah.
But. Yeah. Apparently, you know how there's screens all over in Bison's lair? Apparently, there's 30 hours of material playing on those televisions. I was looking around. I was what is it? I think they just film a lot of the outside. And, I was wondering if they're if there's a sitcom playing on one of them, Married with Children.
Probably.
Whatever.
That's crazy.
Popular
30
in 1994.
Hours? Oh, because there's a bunch of different things playing on
there. There's 50 screens just everywhere.
They come up with all this content, and they gotta screen it. They gotta make sure that it's not too gruesome or anything. Mm-hmm. So they can't just use random images.
You can't use a man being shot in the head.
I don't know, Kevin. I was just going to say they just used a man being shot in the head for this movie, so I guess they didn't screen it too well.
That's true. I guess they didn't really care.
So about that's true. So there's a funny story about the rating for this film. So the MPAA gave the first cut of the film an R rating, which Capcom was not happy about. And then according to D'Souza, there were various cuts that were made, and at some point, the film had a G rating.
No.
G.
Jean-Claude Van Damme. Raul Julia. Street Fighter.
Rated G.
Yeah, I actually wrote that down. Yeah, it was rated G, but Souza knew that teenagers wouldn't watch it if it was rated G. So he was like, I want teenagers to watch this because they're the ones who are actually playing Street Fighter, and so I don't know if you were gonna say this, but they added a swear word that Jean-Claude Van Damme says.
Oh yeah,
just to bring the rating up from a rated G. A G movie? That's so crazy.
He calls Bison a dickhead.
Anytime, dickhead.
Oh, that's what it is. It's just an expletive.
When he's in that pit, he's like, I spent all that time in the army for this shit.
4 years of ROTC for this shit.
I guess that bumped it up to the PG-13.
Oh, I guess the shit. Is shit a swear word? I don't even know anymore. I don't know what swear word actually is.
You don't remember that Blink-182 song, Kevin, that named all of the swear words?
Oh, really?
We'll link that in the description here, I think. That'll be a great one.
I know this.
Yeah. But I still can't believe that this movie went from an R rating to a G. Can you imagine if, like, I don't know, like Toy Story was once an R-rated film and there was a scene with, like, Woody telling Buzz to go fuck himself? That would just be
why was it rated R before? Did they have a sex scene and they're just like let's cut the sex scene. Oh wait, it was just the sex scene that brought it to a rated R. It's now rated G. Rated G? I can't
Who
even
Who would Bison like, have sex with in
what's
this
a
movie?
Rated G movie? Freaking Beauty and the Beast?
I don't know. I don't know. Bob the Builder.
There was the scene with Balrog and E. Honda when they were in prison, and they make a gay joke about a hand job. I don't know if you remember that scene.
Honda, give me a hand. I've only been in jail 2 hours. Maybe next month.
I would have rated. That's why it's rated G. That's fine.
Maybe there was R. Maybe there was R at some point. Maybe that E. Honda and Balrog.
Okay.
They did a dirty deed and then they had to remove it.
I guess. Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, no, that would be pretty crazy.
Yeah, he says, give me a hand, and then Balrog says, you've only been in prison for 20 minutes, maybe next week, something like that. It went over my head as a kid.
Yeah, it went over my head today. I didn't.
It's the 90s. It's the 90s, so every movie had to have a gay joke.
Yeah, oh, there was a lot of gay panic in the 90s.
Mm-hmm. No doubt about it.
There was one in Double Dragon we didn't talk about, too.
I mean, let's keep track of that going forward, Doug. I'll keep track of how many humans are genetically modified throughout these films, and you'll keep track of all of the gay jokes.
Goro is a genetically modified human, so I think in our next movie, Goro is probably... He's got to be a genetically modified human.
I don't know. I haven't seen the Mortal Kombat movie in a long time. There probably is a scene
either.
In which somebody like transmorphs into like a superhuman. So,
well, he does say it has begun. Maybe that's Goro turning from a human into the four-armed monster that he is. I don't know. I haven't seen in a long time. But yeah, I guess we'll have to keep track. I got to keep track of something. I'll figure out something to keep track of.
So the one in Double Dragon that I remember was the... I'll just say it now and then we'll continue keeping track of it. There's the scene where they're driving around after curfew and one of the Mohawk guys shows up. Well, they're driving and then they see a pretty lady who's pulled over on the side of the road. And they get up close and they realize it's a man in a wig. And then Jimmy says to Billy, "Oh, she's definitely your type, huh?" Because Billy says, "Oh, she's my type."
Stick with it at 2 o'clock if she is my type. Pull over. Pull over.
I really don't think it's a good idea.
Removes the wig, it's a man.
You're right.
She is your type.
Oh my god.
Fucking 90s.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll probably see that a few more times.
Oh, definitely.
Whatever 90s movies we... I don't know if we're going to see it. Maybe Johnny Cage will say something like that. I couldn't see any of the other characters saying something like that, but Johnny Cage, possibly. Maybe Raiden, because he's a little bit goofy, too.
I also want to talk... So, Street Fighter being made into a movie during this time would be like... What's a good analogy? It would be like Animal Crossing being made into a movie right during the middle of the pandemic. Like, Street Fighter was one of the biggest games in the world right during 1992. And so for it to be made into a movie in this way is pretty spectacular. And I think coming up, like, the next movie... It is probably the biggest game in the world right when it's being made. Mortal Kombat was huge. I remember going to the movie theater to see Mortal Kombat coming up, and it was massive. Like, it was probably my first blockbuster experience that I remember.
Same here.
Because I played the game and the movie. I was like super excited for the movie. So I'm pretty excited to talk about the next one.
Yeah, same. I loved video games, but the only video game movie I saw was Mortal Kombat and Mario. Because I did see Mario at one point as a kid, but all these other movies I never saw as a kid. So Mortal Kombat will be a lot of fun to talk about. But I didn't even have Mortal Kombat growing up. Did you actually have the game?
Mortal Kombat?
That, either of you?
I had the Super Nintendo one with the sweat. Didn't have blood.
Oh, did you have a Sega?
No, Super Nintendo was the... Oh.
Yeah, I had a Sega.
You had a Sega, so you had the blood?
I had Mortal Kombat on the Sega, and then...
What were your parents thinking?
I don't know, man. I had Mortal Kombat on the Sega, and then years down the line, I just remember... somebody in my family saying to me, like, "How did you get this game?" And I just remember my grandma went out on like vacation, and she would always bring back a game for me at the end of vacation. And so she brought this game back, and she was like, "Oh, this was the guy at the store said this was the best game. This is the most popular game right now." And she gave it to me, and I was like, "Okay, cool. This is gonna be a great game."
A scene where someone just pulled a heart out of somebody as a final, and she's like, "I gotta get this for Paul. He'll love this."
From that point forward, I think she only bought Nintendo games after that point. I had like
That's fair.
Four Sega games. I had this, I had The Lion King, I had Sonic 2 and Sonic and Knuckles. That was it.
My parents definitely wouldn't have. They would have saw that and then yelled at me for playing it and not, even though they bought it for me. Yeah, I wouldn't have been able to play Mortal Kombat at all, just because of the blood in it, which is sad. I did play it. I played it at a friend's house.
Maybe mine.
it could have been yours. I played it in kindergarten, I think.
Yeah.
At a friend's house, and I remember it being very hard. I was terrible in Mortal Kombat.
When you have to fight the two, you have to fight two people in one match. That always looks not very difficult.
Yeah.
Right before you fight Goro.
You know what? I had it on Game Boy. Yeah, I did actually have the game, but I had it on Game Boy, which was a much different experience than on any of those other actual systems. I remember it being really bad.
How do you play it with two buttons? It sounds
badly, awful, poorly. It was awful. I mean that the Game Boy was my main console pretty much for a long period of time. So I got pretty good with those two buttons.
You know what's worse than that? Actually, my older brother had the Tiger handheld version of the
game. A version of the game. No, I had a lot of those Tiger handhelds. Pretty good. Best one was Batman. You should play that one. I never beat it. It was a very sad, sad time in my life. But yeah, I definitely am excited to talk about Mortal Kombat. Did you guys have anything else you wanted to talk about with Street Fighter?
A few more interesting facts about the film. So we didn't really talk about the setting. So the film, it was filmed mostly in Queensland, Australia.
Yeah.
And some of the scenes were filmed in Bangkok, Thailand, which were used to provide the setting for Shadaloo City. And D'Souza originally wanted the attack on Bison's hideout to include helicopters, but they were unable to due to political issues with Myanmar, Burma, which was Burma at the time. And that just led to the boat scene. And also, did you guys watch after the credits, the post-credit scene?
Yes, where M. Bison sticks his hand out of the ground.
He's still alive and they were going to make another one.
So apparently that was omitted from the theatrical release out of respect for Raul Julia.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. I didn't know that.
That scene creeps me out. I don't know. Very creepy scene. Just knowing the fact that he died 6 weeks after the film was done is just...
Well, wait. Let's talk about the ending of the film anyway. Because what... So, okay. Let's just talk about it. The whole place is going down. It's going to blow up. And Dhalsim and Blanca are in a room. And in comes Guile, and Guile says, "Come on, guys, I'm gonna get you guys out of here." And Blanca and Dhalsim say, "No, no, no, it's fine. I'll get Blanca out. We're gonna go our own way," this sort of thing. And so Guile's like, "Okay, fine." And then they leave, and then they cut to a scene no more than like 30 seconds later, and just the whole place is blowing up. And Blanca and Dhalsim are huddled together in a corner, and everything falls down on them. Do Blanca and Dhalsim just, dead. Like, kill themselves? Is that what they do in this movie?
Yeah,
they
I think died. So. Yeah, Dhalsim's like, "I'm responsible for this." He thought he was responsible for creating Blanca, and Blanca is just,
and he wanted
like,
to die.
Yeah, so our hero of the film was going to shoot him in the head.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Which confused me as a kid. I'm like, why is he going to shoot Blanca? Isn't that his friend? And then,
it is his friend.
And then Dhalsim stops him from shooting him.
So...
Yeah, so that they could die together in a corner.
Just from that scene alone, that should have gotten the R rating, because like, they actually just commit suicide. That's what they do. They're like, "Oh, yeah, forget about it. We're just going to kill ourselves in this thing."
Yeah.
And then they all cheer at the end, too. They all do their victory poses, and they're like, "Yay!"
Yeah.
Even though Blanca and Dhalsim are dead.
There's two people still in there that are just practically innocent.
They're not dead.
Vega.
No.
A Vega originally died after being impaled from his own claw, but then they removed that from the film. If you notice, he wasn't at the end. Because you see Sagat and DJ, they're playing around with the fake Bison dollars. But you see Vega's nowhere to be found, so he is dead.
So Vega's actually dead?
Yep.
That's fine. Vega probably deserves to die. No, the other guys are not dead. I mean, Guile got out.
Yeah, Guile got out. Everybody else got out.
Miraculously. How the hell did Guile get out? Like, he had no chance to get out. Those guys, they're surviving. They're huddling in a corner somewhere. They're fine.
I also would like to talk about the end of the movie poses. And let's just go over them real quick. Try to pull up a picture of them, because I think the poses are really awesome.
Well, yeah, they're straight from the game.
Yeah, they do them straight from the game. They're pretty good. I think Jean-Claude Van Damme really nails Guile's, like, comb. The guy who plays Ken Masters looks like a parody of Ken Masters. It just didn't look anything like Ken.
Looks like Joey Gladstone.
It pretty much, it's just so bad.
I know I've said that. I'm going to keep saying it.
Ryu looks like he's about ready to like go to bed. He looks like he's in pajamas. The person who plays E. Honda, just that is the best representation of E. Honda. His pose, it's really good. Zagat is really good. So is Chung Li. I mean, this is just an all around really good ending pose. I'm pretty.
But Ryu did a terrible job with his pose. Why didn't he do the? Why didn't he do Ryu's pose? Ryu's pose is like he's doing like he fires up his one hand. That's what he does. Why is he
no
doing like
Ryu
this,
doesn't
like I'm a badass.
No Ryu.
Yes, he does.
Ryu crosses his
Look at
arms.
Ryu's pose.
He crosses his arms, then he has one fist in the air.
Yeah, he's
they each have two poses.
Oh, they do each have two poses.
His other
That's
post
right.
Is, oh, his other pose is I'm looking cool. Like, oh, that's a stupid pose. I would put my hand up. Maybe it's because Ken is putting his hand
yeah.
up in this picture. I liked Chun-Li. She did her pose spot on.
I agree.
And E. Honda. They just... though. Does Guile do the arm, like the flex? Is that his thing?
Oh, the brushing his hair? Yes.
Oh, yeah, he combs his hair, and does he flex? What's his other pose?
Well, he's flexing, so...
No, Guile is combing his hair.
Oh, no, he does flex. No, he flexes. He does this. So Jean-Claude Van Damme is actually doing the right pose, though he's standing a little weird. He must be on some cocaine in that.
Definitely. Oh, definitely.
But yeah. Oh, no doubt. Wait, who's the? Oh, that's that guy you were talking about.
Oh, Sawada.
Yeah,
Sawada. He's in a pose. See, why didn't they have Dhalsim survive in Blanca so that they could be in this pose?
I mean,
I just don't understand.
I think we actually do have to talk about the character design for Blanca in this movie. What were they thinking? Like, we haven't talked about it thus far.
I hated it. What was this bulb on his head?
Yeah, oh, he looks so bad.
Like, it just...
What have they done to me?
I gotta look at it. Oh my god, what was wrong with his face? Why did he look like a Neanderthal? Like, it's just like, they're like, let's just make him look like he's a Neanderthal and make him almost green. Not really green. Really this puke yellow. Just throw it on him and then give him the red hair, but we're not gonna make him the right color. I don't understand it. In this picture, I'm looking at a picture, and they put Blanca next to Carrot Top. I thought it was the actual...
Oh, is it jacked Carrot Top?
I thought it was the actual actor, but when I zoomed in, it was Carrot Top.
You know what's funny? So when I went to Vegas, we stayed at the Luxor, and Carrot Top was playing there. He has like a regular gig at the Luxor Hotel.
I don't know what happened to Carrot Top and why he transformed into a very odd-looking... He was already odd looking, but then he became like jacked and odd looking. didn't make much sense. But yeah, I agree. I don't know what they decided to do here with Blanca. They went with a very, obviously they didn't have CG really well back then, but I feel like prosthetics were a little bit better than this movie. Maybe it's because they spent $8 million on Jean-Claude Van Damme. They didn't have enough money to give him.
All right, someone has to go to Spencer's Gifts and just get a mask put on Blanca.
It's not even that. Like, and if you look at his different Blanca pictures, some of them look even worse than the other one.
Yeah, the only thing that I could think of is that they kind of had no idea how to do it. They just had no idea what to do or like how to make Blanca look like Blanca. So they just did a terrible job. They just rushed it.
So I think Sousa didn't even want him in the movie. So from what it looked like with Dhalsim and Blanca is they were rushed characters. Like, there was no need for them in the movie at all.
No.
They were a very insignificant plot point for M. Bison, and they didn't even do anything in the end. It just... I think that they were added in the end, and they're just like, fuck it, just make him look kind of stupid and just give it to him. Same with Dhalsim. They're just like, fuck it, let's just make him a doctor and make him the guy who created Blanca. Fuck it. We don't care. That's how I felt with these two characters. And that's probably why he killed them at the end. Sousa's probably like, I didn't like these characters, just kill them.
Apparently he really hated the wig, D'Souza. He really did not like the wig they had on Blanca.
I mean,
who would like
yeah,
that
wig? Yeah, I was going to say.
If you look at that wig, it looks like it's freaking the It wig or something.
the shit wig.
It looks terrible. That's so... And he was supposed to be like the super... like a super soldier? Mm-hmm. Who would have thought that
he was gonna kill all the super? He was gonna kill all the hostages. There's this one green dude.
I mean, I guess it's hard to write Blanca in if you were to write him into a story, because he's like a guy who was born in a jungle in Brazil or something like that. Mm-hmm. So how are you supposed to include him into any sensible story? Why the hell would he be there otherwise? So I guess I understood why they threw him in like this, but it's still just wacky. Same with Dhalsim. Like, how could you give him more of a... how could you make this pacifist yoga guy want to actually be in this Sadalu area or country fighting M. Bison? It's very hard to write around those characters. So,
One thing I want to mention about Dhalsim and Blanca... You know when he's trying to like reverse his mind to become more human after he showed him all the footage of people getting shot in the head? So I noticed there's like a wedding, dolphins, Martin Luther King, and a baby cooing. That's the opposite film footage you want to show of like dictators, people getting shot, and fires and all that.
What did they do? What was that
again? So you remember when they when Dhalsim, he's like, Blanca's almost complete with his mind being altered to become evil.
Right.
So he's showing him all like the evil footage of, you know, all the violent stuff. Dhalsim programs good images, I guess you could say, with like a wedding. There's a wedding, yeah. Dolphins, Martin Luther King, and a baby cooing.
No, I mean those are the most pure things in life. Especially dolphins. Come on. Yeah. Who can hate a dolphin? Look. So did you guys have any other fun facts you wanted to share about the movie?
Yeah. So, you know the radio DJ you hear throughout the movie? He's like, good morning, Shadaloo. That guy?
Yeah.
Yes.
That's a cameo from Adrian Cronauer, who was the real radio DJ that Robin Williams' character from Good Morning Vietnam is based off of.
Oh, really?
And you were talking about that, I actually thought it was from Good Morning Vietnam or whatever.
No, it's actually his one and only film credit to this day. And he's not going to have any more because he is dead.
No, that's...
Also, another like fun Williams. Fact was, you know how they're called? Oh, yeah, he did too.
Swip for a dark time here.
So, you know how they're the Allied Nations rather than the United Nations?
Yeah. Yes.
So, Capcom executives asked for D'Souza to get permission from the UN to use their name in the film. And the UN lawyers threatened him with many lawsuits. So, I did not know that they were so litigious.
Screw you, UN. Freaking assholes.
Yeah, really.
Couldn't even use the name United Nations. Like,
I mean...
It's almost like the United States suing for using United States.
No comment.
It's just stupid.
Also, there's a little bit of commentary on current events, I should say, at the time. There's a scene that where Honda is getting whipped. That was happened before the gay joke we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
So that was done in a response to a story of a kid getting caned in Singapore who was spray painting stuff. Do you remember that story?
Yeah.
Yeah, so D'Souza put that in the film to kind of mock, to kind of poke fun at that.
Huh.
So,
what? Poke fun at it?
Yeah, I guess because it's funny. Someone going to Singapore and getting caned for using spray paint. That's funny.
That's pretty funny.
Just to people in 1994, I guess it was. Weird. Also, did you notice, you know the smug British guy that
is yes.
like guy yeah. with boss who wants him to call off? Yeah, that's the villain from Ace Ventura When Nature Calls.
Yes, I was going to tell you that is the guy from Ace Ventura.
I just saw that movie.
Yep, Dan Marino.
Oh, I guess it is. It's not. It was Dan Marino.
No, I'm joking.
I know.
And one more thing I noticed.
I did not pay attention to that.
One more thing I noticed. It was kind of, you had to really pay attention, but did you hear the Goofy scream?
No.
The Goofy?
Where?
Like, yeah, you know like the scream from like Disney films? It's like, Woo-hoo-hoo-hoo! They play it it's Goofy's signature scream, but they use it in a lot of Disney films. And also the Wilhelm scream. The Wilhelm scream is also in this film.
Meanwhile, the location of the city.
Yeah.
Wow, the Wilhelm scream is in every single 90s movie and 80s movie, and I think almost every single movie.
Yeah,
I think
it's in Lord Star Wars. Rings,
to be honest. Mm-hmm. Pretty sure it's in Lord of the Rings.
In this movie, it's in like the first like 2 minutes.
I mean, this movie's cheesy enough to throw the frickin' Wilhelm scream in. But the Goofy scream?
Yeah, did they have to pay Disney for that? Because Disney probably owns the rights to that sound. I don't think that's like a... royalty free.
I don't know where it is. You have to link it.
The Wilhelm scream is.
We'll have to link it so that everybody can listen to it, because I do not remember where it was in this movie.
Yeah, I don't remember it either. Was it actually the goof, like spot on Goofy?
Yeah,
scream?
It was the scene where they're fighting outside of Bison's temple. Like when they're outside of the temple above Bison's lair. Yeah, it's like someone blows something up and some guy goes flying and you hear it. So I'll have to.
They should use that more often. That's way better than the Wilhelm scream. Freaking Goofy scream? Paul, do you have any other little fun facts about the movie?
Not really.
While he's looking that up.
No.
I'm
all set. I'm looking forward to talking about Mortal Kombat, though.
I am really looking forward. What's after Mortal Kombat? Anything? Is that the
Mortal
last
Mortal Kombat Annihilation. It's
not. Oh, Mortal Kombat Annihilation.
There's nothing in between. I thought there was one in between those two, but there isn't.
When did Annihilation come out? 98?
90, I think it was 97.
97.
I
never saw
that
movie. Annihilation.
That movie's on the same scale as Troll 2 or The Room. It's so much fun, but so bad. Nothing in that movie makes sense, but we'll get to that.
Good.
So that does it for this episode of Reset and Rewind, Street Fighter the Movie. We do not have an Instagram or Twitter or Facebook yet. Maybe we'll do that at some point. Maybe next episode we'll have that. Who knows? But we do have an email, resetandrewindpodcast@gmail.com. And anything else you guys have to say?
Just that if you guys really want to play a really fun game that is related to Street Fighter, there was a Power Rangers mobile game back in like 2018 that had a crossover with the Power Rangers and Street Fighter. And it's called... what is it? Power Rangers Legacy Wars. And in it, Chun-Li and Ryu transform into Power Rangers. So take that away with you. Do whatever you want with it. But it's on mobile. It's actually a pretty good game, and it's pretty rad. It's a pretty good crossover. So
Paul made the game. He actually.
I wish. No. I'm a big fan of both franchises, and I wish that I would have thought to combine the two of them.
Well, that's good. I might have to try that game.
Oh, it's worth it.
I probably suck at it because it's a fighting game, and I just suck at every single fighting game known to man. But, well, yeah, I think that's it. And thanks for listening. We'll talk to you guys later.
All right. Take it away, M. Bison.
Game over!